Welcome to the Adonis Index podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Vivek. And Vivek's just going to use K as his last name. And he came in third place in our transformation contest. If you're listening on iTunes, go over to AdonisIndex.com and check out his pictures. Vivek had a really dramatic transformation. So thanks for being on the call. And let's get into, well, I mean, I want to talk about the stuff you and I were talking about just before I started recording, but give us your history with training, if you've trained at all, or how what kind of training you did, and then give us the short history of how you got up to being a part of Adonis.
Well, I've always wanted to be, in a theoretical sense, I've known that I've always wanted to be in shape and ripped or in good shape, but I've never really thought about it beyond that. And early on, and as far as my history of training, until this year, none. If you told me squats or a bench press, they would have, I would have given you blank stares. They all sounded the same to me, and I would have known that it's vaguely connected to working out, but that's about it. And as far as dieting, I didn't necessarily even have an idea. I mean, I knew calories because, in general, people, you see it on labels, and that's about it. I even remember when they talked about Michael Phelps, there was talk of him consuming a crazy amount of calories, like 10,000 or something. And I distinctly remember going, is that supposed to be a lot? I mean, I really didn't know what any of this meant. So until this year, dieting and exercise was an unknown concept to me, really.
Okay, so did you take any action on actually before us, did you do any training or any dieting at all?
I early this year I did. I had a vague idea that that eating healthy would help. So for a couple of months, before starting the Adonis Index, I moved towards, I was about 200 pounds, 195, 200 pounds, and I'm about 5'10". So I started eating, for 2 months, like somewhere around April or May, I thought that would help because I read a little bit about it online and some other places. And I did was eat quote unquote healthy food. And I'm already a vegetarian. And I used to, I used to eat, out all the time, like Taco Bell or pizza. And so for those 2 months, all I had was fruits, vegetables, brown rice, the things that are told to you that are healthy online. And, well, it made no difference whatsoever. I mean, I'm going to say it absolutely made no difference in my weight. Did I feel better? That's a little bit hard to say. Perhaps I did, but then that could just be variety or something different. But I certainly didn't lose any weight. There was nothing measurable that changed in any way. And
and that's because you weren't, obviously, looking back now. It's just because you weren't paying attention to calories, right?
Correct. I wasn't paying attention to calories at all. I was eating as much. I probably ate as much as I did before. It was just very, very, what's considered very, very healthy, and it made absolutely no difference. And, around this time, I was really, my goal wasn't just to lose weight. I was overweight, but not obese. I guess looking back now, I was somewhere in the 27 BMI, which I guess puts me in the overweight category, not obese category.
Yeah. And not too far into it, yeah.
Yeah, not too far into it, right. Yeah. And really my goal wasn't necessarily to lose a bunch of weight. It was really to it was really, you know, to look good. It was very much aesthetics. And in the field where I am, in the software field, and in where I work, in the software company that I'm the CEO of, a lot of what I do is try to make web applications aesthetic or products aesthetic, like the iPhone being very nice, pleasing to use, pleasing to look at. And so there's certainly some art, but there's an incredible amount of science in it. There's an incredible amount of math, measurements, concepts, and other things that go into it. And so when I came across the Adonis Index, it was incredible. It was an epiphany. It was the first time that somebody had actually quantified and put some science and math around the concept of aesthetics, and it immediately made perfect sense.
Right. So it's something you'd already been working with your business.
Yes.
But applied to technology versus applied to the human body.
Absolutely. Applied to technology and versus applied to the human body. And that's the interesting thing, the golden ratio. Actually is a big part of it's not the only, there are other things there are other concepts that are there, but it's certainly an important concept in applying it to technology. It's not just aesthetics but also usability and other things, and so to see the same thing applied to the human body was absolutely incredible. And I immediately knew right then and there when I saw that that's what made sense, and everything I'd been reading until then, it wasn't that it was wrong, it was just that it was incomplete. There were just pieces of the picture.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So it's like they were all hitting around the bullseye but didn't hit it.
So. Yeah, and I see the same thing in the technology world, and there are people, some technology companies, they look at a certain market or look at a certain niche, and they just focus on that piece instead of looking at what does the consumer want? Let's give them an experience that solves a specific problem they have and gives them what they want in a manner that's going to be pleasing to them, rather than they get caught up in, well, here's a segment of the market and this is what these people are doing, let's do that. It's a very incomplete picture, and that's where this was very different.
Yeah, I think a lot of businesses can fall into that trap of trying to like niche out without asking just the super simple question, okay, what do people want? I mean, it sounds so simple, but it's actually kind of, you gotta. It's easy. I know what you're saying. It's easy to get like caught up in the splitting off into very, very specific niches versus just the super general question, like what do people actually want? It's I think a lot of businesses miss that completely, to ask that basic question like on a regular basis.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's probably the most missed question, especially in technology. Which is why, for example, Apple was so successful with the iPhone. It's because almost every phone before it missed that simple question. They couldn't make a smartphone that was that people just enjoyed and wanted to use.
Okay, so, man, I feel like I'm going to start interviewing you about technology. Maybe we'll do that another time. But, so you had a pretty crazy transformation. Let's get to, once you got on the program, like, what'd you do?
Well, I got on the program, and I started studying it. I started looking into it, and I immediately knew that one of the things I wanted to do was get into the contest and try to do real well in the contest. And so I started started implementing and figuring out how I was doing. One of the techniques I used was, it's called the iterative technique in software processes, which is you rather than try to plan the whole thing out, you have a plan which you analyze in a short time frame, like a week, and you analyze in a short time frame. You do something and stick to it for a short time frame, and then you go back and examine the results, examine the metrics, examine how you're going, and then make whatever changes you need to, and then you implement it completely and till the next short time frame, and keep doing it that way. And so that's in a nutshell is what the iterative process is. And it sounds simple, but it's something that's just about 10 years to 15 years old. People didn't really do it a whole lot before that. And so it was really collecting the relevant metrics. And like what I was saying before the podcast was that people have a very poor understanding of how to use metrics in general. They either don't use it at all and things are a little bit mumbo-jumbo how they go forward, or they use it and they think that's it. And a classic example of this is in schools when they have standardized testing. On one hand, if you don't have any metrics at all to see how people are learning, that's not, you have no idea. But then if that's all you use, you get a skewed view of how people are doing. And so understanding the limitations was important. And so what I did was I created a spreadsheet and where I counted everything I ate, and of course by the principles of Adonis and all the other principles, I realized by then that eating healthy wasn't the issue. You eat a variety, eat what you like. Of course, have your fruits and vegetables and then eat what you like. And then what's important is to eat at the caloric deficit. And so what I did was I looked at things on a weekly basis. I created a spreadsheet in Google Spreadsheets. And it was much easier to use that and much more flexible than some of the online calorie counting programs. And it was real simple. I had my iPhone with me all the time. Anytime I ate, I just logged what I ate and, put approximately how much calories it was. As long as I had a clear understanding that it was an approximate number and there was going to be some variation here and there based on mislabeling or my miscalculating or other things, that was fine. And so I then multiplied that by 7, and that was my goal for the week for maintenance. And so if I wanted to lose body fat, I approximately subtracted 3,500 per pound of body fat I wanted to lose. Mm-hmm. And I realized that's an approximation, so it takes, sometimes you lose more, sometimes, there are other factors that go into it, but it's a good approximation. And so that's how I wanted to go. Well, early on, I wanted to lose a lot. I wanted to have dramatic success early on to also motivate myself. So the first few weeks, I went on a very, very low-calorie diet.
How low?
Well, pretty much all I had was my 70 grams of protein for a lot of days of the week, unless I was having lunch with one of my clients or dinner with my friends, in which case I had normal, like they didn't know I was dieting. I would just
right, yeah. So you didn't really let people see it.
Oh, no. Because one of my big goals was of doing this, with all honesty, it's not for health, it's for aesthetics. And so, and also to be able to have a good social life. And so, I didn't, this sounds odd, but I didn't want to seem weird, when I was out with friends or when I was out with clients. And so I just ate normally when I was with them. But other than that, all I had was my 70 grams of protein, and that's about it.
I mean, and you did that for how many? How long did you carry on that more extreme pattern?
I did that for about almost 4 weeks. In the first 4 weeks of the contest, I started at about 200 pounds. By the time the contest started, I was already in the under 180 range. So I already within a few weeks. Maybe 5-6 weeks. I can't remember exactly when I got into Adonis and learned about it and then started the context. But in not that many weeks, I already lost about 20 something pounds just experimenting on lower calorie, going on the lower calorie. Mm-hmm. And so then when I started it, it's like I would have my protein either from protein shakes, which had a 1:4 ratio of calories to protein. So I would be able to keep my calories really low, or at best I would have like egg whites, which is closer to a 1:5 ratio of calories to protein. But I would do that. But at this time I was also, remember, I'm very new to working out. I mean, it was quite a challenge to try to figure out MBS when you're ridiculously new to working out. So
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's you jumped into quite a bit of volume. How was that for you anyways?
Before I was on my very low calorie diet, I could do some of it okay. But on the very low calorie diet, it was physically impossible to do very well. I mean, I gave it every ounce of mental toughness I had, but to put in my 100%, it was pretty close to physically impossible to give my 100%. I gave it all I had. I gave it all I could, on top of it being completely new to me. Mm-hmm. But
well, it's a tough one to do. A lot of guys find MBF tough to do with low calories. They find they just need to bring their calories back up on that one.
Yes, but that was a catch-22, because here I'm wanting to lose weight as quickly as possible and gain muscle. So between the two, I made the calculation that muscle is rate-limiting. There's a certain speed at which it grows, as per your podcast and everything you said. But weight loss, you have much more control over. And so the simple calculation I made was that I'm going to do all I can at the gym, but I'm going to really keep my calories low and get my weight loss. I can always, muscle building is a many, many months, even years-long process, while weight loss can be done rapidly, it just made sense to me that the rapid nature would take precedence between the two. If one had to take precedence, it would.
Sure, and then you can spend, and you've got plenty lean enough, I would say from now on, or at least for the foreseeable future, your pattern now should just be maintaining the leanness while now focusing on muscle building. I mean, is that, I'm assuming that's where your mind's going now?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's been a little more than three weeks since Thanksgiving, and by the way, thank you for ending the contest before Thanksgiving.
Oh, we do that on purpose. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been, I would say, cruel and unusual punishment if the contest went on the week after. But it was great to end it after Thanksgiving and then get into the maintenance mode, which had its own challenges, I guess.
Let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, I was dieting, I mean, I had the extreme diet first 4 weeks and even till the end of the contest, I upped my calories somewhat when I did get sick in the middle. I upped my calories somewhat, but then I still kept it to very low calories, right throughout the contest. But after the contest, a strange thing did happen. I was never one to binge. I ate a lot. I mean, I did eat. I ate. I was overweight, but not obese. I was never one to binge. I was one to finish my plate. I was one to enjoy my food, but never. I never had that desire to just keep eating and eating and eating.
Mm-hmm.
And the days after, I guess the extreme dieting had done something. Perhaps hormonally, perhaps otherwise. I have no idea. But it certainly had this desire to binge. And so I was enjoying the food after on Thanksgiving and the day after. But it was certainly this urge to keep eating, even when I was full, even when I knew I was full. And the way I handled it was the same way that had worked well for me in my business and in the contest, which was just to keep track of what I was doing. I was like, okay, I'm binging, which is fine. And I'm also kind of sort of enjoying this, so fine, I'll do it for a few days, but I'll just keep track of what I did so I can go back and analyze what happened. Like, there was a day I think I hit about 5,500 calories, which was incredibly high. I mean, in the contest, even after the extreme few days, that was probably what I ate in the first few, like in weeks or
yeah. Now you're doing it in a day.
Yeah. And I kept track of it and then went back and it was enjoyable too in a strange sense. And that was okay. And so I just kept track of it at the end of the week on Sunday. I went back and that was my analysis day to go back and look at the numbers and do I need to do something different? Mm-hmm. And, I looked at it and I was like, well, it's going to be this many calories. And so, let me corroborate that to weight gain and approximately and then find a pattern that sort of works. And so,
it's been three weeks. Does that sort of urge to really, really, like the binge urge, I guess you called it, is it sort of fading now, or was it just a few days? Like, where are you at now?
Oh yeah, it was very intense the first week after the contest. It subsided after. The key thing was I was not panicking over it. I was more just measuring it to see how many calories I'd gotten over, so I could then figure out what to do to start slowly coming back. And it got better the week after, and the last week it has pretty much completely subsided and it's gone. So now I'm
so in 3 weeks you've seemed to reset to a new sort of baseline.
Yeah, I've completely reset to a new baseline, and I've now found a pattern that kind of works, which is I also and it was interesting to record the numbers because I recorded my weight change. Like I would measure my weight in the morning after using the restroom completely, so that it was kind of, so it would at least keep the water fluctuations to a minimum or the food fluctuations to minimum. At least it provided some amount of stability. And there's an approximate, at least in my case, there was an approximate correlation between the amount of calories I ate. It's pretty close. The amount of calories I overate from my RMR to my weight increase. It wasn't by much. It was about 6 pounds, 5 pounds. And then I went back and looked at the calories I had overdone beyond my RMR, which, by the way, in the middle of the contest, I got it clinically measured.
Oh, cool. And where'd you end up?
Well, I'm sorry, were you asking about the calories or the RMR?
Yeah, the measurement, yeah.
Oh, the measurement. Yeah. I was actually at about 1,500, 1480 or somewhere in that ballpark. This was in the middle of the contest when I was starting to lose weight pretty rapidly, and then the weight change was starting to plateau a little bit. I mean, the weight decrease was starting to plateau. I needed more energy to be able to do some workouts. I wanted to eat a little bit more than a very low amount of calories. So I mean, I still wanted to keep it low, but I had to know roughly where I could go. And so it was, I did a lot of research on it, and it's amazing that there's, you know, almost every major city there are places that you can go to get it clinically measured by a doctor, and it costs about $100, but it's a one-time amount, and so I went to the Cooper Clinic in Dallas, and you just pay them $100, and they use a machine to measure, your carbon dioxide emission and the change of the carbon dioxide emission from the baseline to then measure your RMR. And so that helped me in the middle of the contest a lot because I also use techniques such as that's my RMR approximately, and I'm going to be going to a lunch with my clients, or I'm going to go to dinner with my friends. I'm probably going to eat this and this at the restaurant, and I'm going to eat normally, but I still want to maintain my, I still want to keep up my weight loss. So I'm just going to do additional cardio in advance to earn the right to,
sure. Yeah.
to do that.
Now, did you find that pretty, I don't know what the word is, powerful, did it give you some sense of like security, confidence? I'm searching for the word, but when you saw like a clinical measurement of your RMR, how did that make you react or feel?
It had multiple emotions in me. One, I was my first reaction honestly was disbelief. It seemed low to me because I thought my maintenance would be I just thought it would be higher. In some of your material, you have, as for the calculations, it's higher too. I mean, there are a couple of different things about me. One is in the calculations of that, where you multiply by 21.6 in kilograms and subtract and add 370 and some of the calculations that you have, based on those calculations, it should have been higher. So the fact that it was a little bit lower was a little bit of a shock to me and disappointment almost. It was almost like...
We all wish it would be higher. Of course, we all wish. But it's a range, right? Like our calculations is an average.
Exactly.
And you know enough about numbers to know that an average doesn't mean anyone actually is necessarily on the average. It's like people can cluster on the above and below it. And, you know... And I think we all wish we're clustered above it, but that's impossible if it's an average. That means some of us have to be below it.
Right. But when I thought about it, it also made perfect sense that I was below it because my weight by then had already come down to the 140s, and I'm 5'10". So as per the chart that I can't remember in which book of your material, but in one of the charts I found very interesting was that if you're 5'10", the median lean body mass is about 148, and then there's the rule of sevenths if you're
oh different. Right, yeah.
Well, I'm 5'10", so 148 for most people of 5'10", 148 would be the lean body mass median, and which if you
but
add
your total body mass was 140.
Yeah, my total body mass was in the 140s, not just my lean body mass.
Right. So that means for sure you would come below what our predicted equations were.
Exactly.
You know, maybe,
so it made perfect sense once all that was
And then maybe 5-6 years from now, as you build muscle, your RMR would actually start coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably what might happen and what I'm hoping.
The thing is, the message you're speaking here is one of metrics. Like it's, you measure, you get what you, I mean, the body is, people don't want to accept this, but your body's a machine, and it's totally predictable and totally measurable. And based on, yeah, we do have averages, you know, we do have charts. And like you said, you went and you saw the chart, you're like, oh, I wonder where I am compared to that chart. Then you went and got yourself tested, and you realized, oh, I'm below that. But then when you went back and did some more analysis, and you realized, oh, based on my lean body mass, it makes perfect sense that I'm below the average. And it's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's just what is. It's just what is. And that's – until people want to take the time to actually measure this stuff, they'll tell themselves all sort of stories about one thing or another. They're going to think they're special and all that stuff. But then when you actually measure it, you can almost always get your answer just from a metric. Like from some measurement somewhere will tell you exactly what – you just can find this stuff out by measuring.
Yeah, absolutely. Metrics is, if there's a message here, it's that in both in my business life and in my personal, in this, it's that, the human mind is emotional in nature. And so you have your disappointments and you have your things. And so left to itself, it's gonna try to justify anything or what, and if you try to go attack a problem, emotionally, which is how the human mind is naturally meant to go, then your success isn't gonna be as good. If you brutally try to move the emotions away and just brutally look at the metrics, just try to dispassionately analyze it as if you were a different person. Like imagine, take your situation and think it's a third person and then just brutally analyze it and try to move the emotions out of it, then what you get is going to be the real answer.
And that's what I do. That's what I do when I look at the pictures and have to judge the contest. I don't know what it felt like to go through it for each person, and I don't know like all the other things involved. All I'm doing is looking at metrics and pictures and be like, oh, this person made it this far, and this person made it this far, and this is what they did. And when you're in the middle of it is the worst, right? Like you said, you need to use your metrics. And I like the way you described it brutally. You can't let your emotions take over, otherwise you're going to get nowhere. You don't really force to get into the logical, analytical side of your brain on a daily basis on this one, because you're going to want to trick yourself, and you're going to want to, if you let your emotions get the better of you, you're going to allow yourself to forget about a snack you had, or when you're counting your calories, you can almost say that your mind's going to play a trick on you, or your emotions, if they let get the better of you, They'll get you to the point where you're rationalizing away why an entire meal just doesn't count. And
right.
You can't do that. When you actually start adding it up, you're like, oh, yeah, it's right. I had two coffees, not one. And, oh, my, I forgot about that chocolate snack. And then all of a sudden, you're at your calorie total and it's noon. And you're like, oh, I can't actually believe I'm there. But if you measure it, you've got the data in front of you. Now you have to do something about it. But if you don't measure it and you don't, like you say, brutally force yourself to measure it, you get nowhere if you let your emotions control it. You just can't. This process, to get anywhere in this process, it has to be, like you said, just it's got to be logical. It can't be emotional.
Right. It's probably the key to being successful. That's not to say your emotions aren't gonna be there, but it's real important to. Like even during my binge, I was like, well, I'm binging, but I didn't, I wasn't necessarily ashamed of it or emotional of it. I was like, it is what it is. If it's going to do damage, I guess it will, but at least I want to know exactly what the damage is. Like, I guess Brad Pilon in his blog talks a lot about, all this is, you know, in terms of financial terms, and in my mind, I actually took it much further, which is your RMR is like your salary. Your additional cardio you do is like your overtime. And imagine if nobody pays you any money, nobody in the world is going to give you any money. All you have is your salary and your overtime pay. And that's what you have to get out of debt, which is fat. And so if you do want to take a vacation and there's all this money you're going to pay out, at least measure it. I mean, keep track of how much money you paid so that you now know how much debt you have to pay off. You now have an idea at the end of your vacation. Okay, I did so much. I had this debt. I bought this big screen TV, or I did whatever I did. And now it's there. I mean, there's really no sense in being ashamed of it or having a emotional gut reaction to it and then denying it. That's when people get into trouble.
Get into trouble, yeah, from a debt standpoint, also from a getting out of shape and accumulating body fat standpoint. A lot of people just want to ignore both. They just want to ignore their finances altogether, I'll deal with it later phenomena, but which never later never comes. Like no one deals with it.
It never comes. That's true.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is. I feel like we could go on forever, but let's get to the conclusion of what's your take home message, your most important advice to give to somebody who is trying to create a transformation. Obviously, you created a huge one. So, what's your take home? I think it's going to be metrics, but like, you know, you got the floor for your final advice.
Well, I have a specific goal in mind. You may have a long term goal, but keep certainly a short term goal of a few months, and then think how, in an iterative way, you're getting there. And use metrics to measure how you're getting there. And if something goes wrong, as things will always go wrong, that's fine. Just go back and analyze what it is that went wrong and make those changes to be able to achieve your short-term goal. When you do achieve it, it's like a university. You don't just go in and study and get your degree after 4 years. You do classes, and then you complete those classes, and you progress, and you get those credits, and you move forward all the way until you get your degree. So have those short-term goals in place. Celebrate the achievements you get on your way, and work your way up to your goal. That's what I plan to do now with my muscle gains.
I mean, this one's just your next stage here is just more goals over a longer period of time. It's just because the thing you're measuring now comes slower, and you just this is where you have to retool your measurements for longer term. And the increments are tinier now, right? Like you said, fat loss is rapid. So
the increments are tinier, but the muscle index that you created has been very, very helpful. To me at least, because now it just gives me something to focus on. Is my muscle index going forward, or all the elements of it, of that index, am I making progress on it? Is my squats progressing, or are my other things progressing over time? And so it just helps me keep me on my, it helps, it's helping me keeping me on the right track. At least in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, I think anyone who listens to our stuff knows we're big on indexes, right? So we just, there's metrics. The whole thing's metrics. All right,
yeah.
Well, I think that was a good call, and I think that was the message here is short-term, long-term goals, and keep track of your metrics.
Yeah.
All right, so, well, thanks for being on the call. So for Vivek K., I'm John Barbin, and that's your Adonis Index Podcast. Mm-hmm.